Righto, welcome back to the Virtus Podcast. It's been a minute. I don't even know what season this is, but we're launching for a new season. This is not the first episode that'll release this season, but it'll release in due time. It's been a minute since I've recorded one of these two, so it could be a bit rusty, Coxie. But my first guest for season 4, 5, 6, I don't know, of the Virtus Performance Podcast is Jason Cox, owner of High Performance Cricket, and most importantly, coach of Darcy Murr at the Box Hill Hawks.
Mate, Darcy Murr is honestly, he is a goat, mate. I don't reckon he missed a single rep or set or anything I put in the program all over it. Like, Darcy Murr, mate, you're an absolute gem.
That was literally going to be my first question. Like, what's it like to coach Darcy Murr?
Oh, mate. Like, me and, like, a deal with my a high performance manager, we'll just be like, mate, Darcy Murr, if every player like Darcy Murr, our job would be just the best thing of all time. Well, it is already the best thing of all time, but he is just an absolute, like, he sets the standards. And he's like his first year in VFL program, and he set the standards. We had a little award after every single month. Like, we give out, like, a big protein tub for the best gym goer of the month. And Darcy Murr, I think he was the first one to get it, and we probably could have given it to him every other time.
That's why he's gotten so thick and juicy, because he's just winning these protein tubs every single week, every single month.
On the best program, obviously.
That too. That's funny, because that echoes a very similar conversation we've had here at Virtus, and myself and Lockie have had many, many times. It's just if every member was like Darcy Murr, then they'd be flying. What sort of traits that Darcy elicits makes him so good and that you wish other people would replicate?
Oh, he just gets things done. Like, no matter what sort of situation, if they have like with the constraints of VFL footy and not having the training at night, things like that. Let's say the club puts on a dinner at 7:30 and go off the track at 7:10. You're like, well, you know, where's our 40-minute gym session going? No matter what, like, you know, he has to be upstairs for dinner. He's like, no, I'm getting my gym stuff done because that's more important for his performance, things like that. He's just ruthless with how he gets stuff done. Just such a nice all-round kid as well. Like,
yeah,
respectful. Can banter with him too. Always listens, wants to learn. Just, yeah, awesome. Awesome to see him get a couple of games as well.
So, yeah.
Kick his first goal, which is nice. He's a ripper. Absolute ripper.
Get shit done. Ruthless. Wants to learn. What else should you say?
Respectful.
Respectful. Nice.
Good just looking.
Emulate those five things. Good looking. Well, I can't do anything to help that in myself, so I'm fucked there. But
no, I'm pretty fucked.
If I can emulate those five things, I'll be in a good place.
100%.
I was about to say cricket pre-season's kicking off, but the cricket season's well and truly kicking off. How's things looking at high performance cricket?
No, it's good. A few of the boys like sort of playing their first game, like higher grades and things like that, which is nice. I've had a couple of boys come back from playing like winters in Darwin and UK, who are hopefully pushing for some second 11 opportunities, Victoria and things like that. So it's round one of Victoria this week, bit of rain about. So only half the sort of grades got on, half the sort of teams got on this week. But no, it's good. Looking forward to for the boys to fully get started. Hopefully next week the rain holds off.
I was saying I'm not deep in the cricket scene, but it seems from an outsider looking in, it seems that local cricket every single year, round one at least, sometimes round two and three is just called off because of rain. They usually don't get on the track. Like, what's your experience with that?
So last year it was the first 5 weeks that got rained out. So as I've sort of like with my own cricket, so I started to like lose a little bit of interest and passion to be the best player I can. It actually become a little bit of a blessing in disguise. Last year we got footy trip in, which is nice. Last year we got Caulfield Cup in, which is nice. I think the year before round one was rained out as well, and had one a good mate of mine who we played cricket with, he's from Bendigo, had his 21st on that weekend as well, as I was able to get the Bendigo for that. So as a athlete who started to lose interest in performance himself, I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, that's funny because it seems, you know, I've got a lot of friends who play cricket and it seems like they're almost praying for it to be washed out so they can go to the pub and get in the beers. And I see you've started posting a little series on Instagram about your return to cricket. You posted something the other day about you know, cricket. I think it was cricket rained out for you the other day, correct?
Cricket rained out. Oh, what was it? No, so, yeah, cricket was rained out.
Yeah, and you sort of went through the process of what a cricket athlete, should be doing if rained out to sort of keep themselves conditioned. Do you want to sort of go into that?
Yeah, 100%. So I made a post about, like, when you get rained out or you miss a session, like, you don't want to deload and miss a session, especially at the start of the year when you're on this, like, gradual build of increasing volume, increasing intensity, things like that. So I talked about, like, the things that are most likely to get you injured in a game if you aren't conditioned for is fast bowling and, like, running at high speed, so high-speed running. So instead of, you know, sitting at home doing nothing, it's where it's raining, like, can you get a bowling?
Or getting on the beers.
Or that, or before you got on the beers, was probably more to the point, was to, you know, get out there, do a high-speed running session, get some high-speed meters in, don't go for a slow 5K sort of jog, because, like, the human body is sort of conditioned to run for long, slow periods of time, so you're probably not going to get injured by doing that if you're going to play sport. So if you're going to run fast in the sport, run fast, build your loads up there. Don't let yourself deload, because with cricket, obviously, if you're in playing, like, two-day cricket and you're not running at high speed 1 week and you bat the next week and you sit down and do nothing the whole day, it's 2 weeks where you've deloaded. So, and you're not going to obviously do a top-up when you're watching your team bat. It's not just not feasible with the logistics. So it's just being aware and being a bit proactive and just making sure your loads are up, high speeds are up, so you don't, you know, ping a hammy or a calf or a quad, and make sure you're bowling as well, so we don't have that that deloads. Because as we know, with when you have a sudden spike in load with bowling, that's where, like, all injuries are sort of, especially like stress injuries and that, more common. So just making sure your loads are nice and consistent throughout the season, which is the goal.
Does that top up session on a, you know, a rainy day perhaps look different for a fast bowler and a batsman, for example?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd probably say, like, for a batsman, you probably want to do a little more change direction work in there as well.
Yeah,
because
okay.
Obviously when you're batting, you're shuffling up and down between the wickets. Yep. Bowlers, you probably want a bit more high speed meters, a bit longer distance, because you're required to do that. On game base, I'd probably be two probably main differences there.
Do you have any sort of parameters for, you know, fast bowlers or batters on rainy days? Like, you know, you want them to hit X amount of meters sprint or X amount of change of directions? Like,
not really. Like, if I had, like, GPS and all the players and things like that, like, you'd be able to say, like, I want you to hit, like, a percentage of that, blah, blah. But with the guys I have and not having the budget and the business at this stage to GPS everyone at this stage. But, like, Just do the session that I tell you to do, essentially.
Yeah, do as I say. Exactly. Do as I say, yeah. Like, a lot of these things aren't quite feasible at the local level, are they?
Yeah, 100%. Like, you get some, like, you got the research, and you, like, I do have GPS data from school cricket and things like that we can use. So just topping up with some good high-speed meters.
Yeah, we sort of meters. Use that science to guide, but really just, you know, do what you think's best for them at that time.
100%. Just doing something's better than doing nothing at the end of the day. And just, like, it's more like the thought of the session of, like, trying to get some speed in rather than just going, like, oh, I'm going to run 5K. It's really, really slow. That's sort of the main thing there. Just do something, and then from there we can try and work on something a bit more perfect when we get more data and things like that.
Yeah, good. Tell us about your return. What's that been looking like? So who are you playing for? Why are you returning? Because it seems like it's been a pretty last minute thing from what I'm seeing on socials anyway. Just fill us in on your return.
Yeah, so I went back and played for Kooyarrup in the Magoos on the weekend, which is good fun, actually. Playing with a couple of my really good mates, mates, like, younger brothers, me mate's dad, which is good fun. I haven't played for Kooyarrup since I went to Premier Cricket when I was like 14, 15 probably, so it's been a hot minute since I've been there. That would be like 2015 or something like that since I last played there. So it was good fun. Had a few Saturdays free, and a few boys are on a Kooyarrup's on footy trip this week. So a few boys are away. So I said, if you need me, just let me know.
So what you're saying is you're back in the ones this week then?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. No, the ones did a good job, actually. Knocked off Cardi, which is good.
So we're
playing against our big rival, Cardinia,
this
week. And I'm not the biggest fans of Cardinia. Even though
we hate them?
Hate him.
Yeah, okay.
We really hate him.
Yeah.
Like, we've knocked him off from plenty of flags and that, which is nice. So
yeah, good.
We have the wood over him big time. So, yeah, I'm glad we got the win.
What's it look like from a physical prep standpoint? Like, you know, how many months leading in did you start to prepare for cricket? Or, as you said, was it literally like a last minute thing and now you're sort of, you know, you're going to start preparing for the season ahead?
Yeah.
And so taking it semi-seriously.
Yeah, so the months would probably be inaccurate, maybe like 1 month, maybe.
Yeah.
Since I sort of knew, since I sort of like had the idea, of, maybe I might get out there and have a trundle. So I started bowling a little bit, leading up to it, maybe the last couple of weeks. Got like two bowls in this week. Did it sort of properly. Changed my gym around a little bit. Just staying generally fit in that, obviously, throughout my whole life is the idea. So just fine tuning things a bit towards cricket, get some actual cricket training done, and in a bit more of a better routine now, so I should be able to fit it all in. I'm lucky I work at Xavier at college as well, and we have indoor nets, so even if it is raining there, I'll be able to still get bowling after work and things like that. So I'm going to try and keep myself in reason with Nick. I don't want to get injured, and I don't want to get embarrassed as well going back playing.
Yes, yeah, I guess with we're so fixated on the physical prep, strength and conditioning side of things that we sometimes forget that there's an enormous skill component to it as well. Like it's all well and good to get bowling reps in to condition your body, but it's also a skill of being able to bowl as well.
Oh, 100%. And the mental side of it as well. It's like the last thing I want is to come back and stuck and pumped around by blokes who I think like are no good, things like that. I'm like, oh no, what am I doing with myself? So I actually want to perform and actually play right and play my role too.
Yeah, good. So getting your bowling reps in, you said you had to change your sort of gym stuff around a little bit. What's that looked like?
Oh, well, I was just sort of maybe just addressing a couple of like previous injuries I've had. Had a couple of like side strains, so just a bit more like lateral trunk work there. That's like with some holds and some loaded bands and things like that, and then some like more velocity based stuff with some med balls. A couple of adductor strains as well back in the day, so I was just getting a bit of loading in there.
So just convert like you're a fast bowler, correct?
Fast would be generous these days, but
try to be fast.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
used to be when I was 15.
So your side strain, your adductor, are they common injuries that you might see in a fast bowler? Are they like more specific to you, or like these are common fast bowler injuries?
Yeah, pretty common, especially the side strain. That's probably like the main like soft tissue that they'll do. Yep. So yeah, I think most fast bowlers were done a side strain, and yeah, the adductor one too. I'd say relatively like common as well.
Mm. Do you put that down to load management or perhaps not physically preparing in the gym, recovery?
Yeah, so I'd say like my first side strain, it was definitely looking back now, very, very silly how I did it. It must have been coming out of the back of like a long weekend or something. So we were training back-to-back days, and it was like my first year at like a premier club. So I was like trying to impress, blah, blah, super duper hot day. I reckon I bowled for like, two and a half hours, just non-stop, which is a lot, which is so much. And I was like fatigued and sore. Coming into the next session day after, I think I must have been bowling, right, and they put me like in a high net, blah, blah. Come in, try to bowl flat out. First up, can't remember if I warmed up properly or not. I'm gonna hope I did. And then I just like first ball, ooh, bit of a niggle there, something there. Next one, yeah, it's a bit sore. And then like bang, third ball, just like I've been stabbed in the side.
Oh shit,
done. Shocking. But it would have been like 4 or 5 weeks before like a really big tournament as well. So I was a race against the clock to get back for that, but got back.
We got back.
Got back.
And how did we bowl?
Not too bad. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Pretty good, I think.
Yeah. From a weight room perspective, managing and I don't like the word preventing, but we'll say it for this conversation sake, preventing the common fast bowler injuries, what are some of your lowest hanging fruits?
Yeah, so just like, obviously with the size.
And you sort of brushed on it before, but
yeah, so just like with this, with like the size phrase and that, just like having a bit of a mix of everything, like what do the muscles do and how do they act when bowling and in general life? So probably want to get them strong isometrically, probably want to get them strong in all ranges of motion, so whereas like on a GHD, like side holds and side bends and things like that. So lateral flexion strength, anti-lateral flexion, then like rotational strength, anti-rotational strength, and then you can do it like slow stuff as well, or isometric stuff like the holds and weighted stuff, but you also need to get some speed through it as well. So a gradual increase of load of bowling, that's probably the most like velocity stuff you'll do, and then also some med ball work in there as well. Same sort of, that's like the same principles that like for any part of the body, isn't it? Like you want to get it super duper strong in all the actions that it's going to do, exposed to a variety of different things, and just as a coach pick the best amount of load and what type of load that the person needs at any certain point of time, and just cover all bases and put them out there, and hopefully everything goes well.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
Good. We sort of glossed over this. Tell us more about high performance cricket and your role within it, and the history.
Yeah, so I can high performance career. I started SNC sort of like Instagram page and that at the start, and then
Was this?
I can have been probably when I moved out of home and about 18 months ago or so, I reckon.
Yeah, so you would have been young, what, 20, 21 then?
21, I think 20, 21 in that sort of age realm, and then sort of like picked up a couple of like I was running some programs for people and things like that, blah blah. Like no idea what I'm doing, no system of their online backend stuff that like sounds towards that. Yeah, just like I can write your program how much, mate? I'm like, oh god, I don't know. And then so I started like I had like
three or four people I was programming for on that. And I was just like, looking them up. There's no one really doing like cricket, like strength conditioning sort of stuff. And with like, a lot of my mates play like pretty high level cricket. I'm in that cricket circle, and I love me cricket. A bit of a snuff for it, closet snuff. And then there's a bit of a gap sort of in the market with this, and no one's really doing it. So start up Instagram page, start meshing a few blokes. Say, would you be keen on me doing this? Because from my background, I interned at Crew Victoria in the S&C. During lockdown, so I had I understood, and like my biggest mentor probably is from, he's the high performance manager at Crew Victoria. So
what's his name?
Adrian Mott.
Shout out, good.
Absolute goat. All the boys love him. I love him. He's one of the best men of all time. Has a house in Tremana actually now. So
good.
If you want an Airbnb, go through him.
So
from seeing like that environment, and then sort of being like a premier cricket, so playing like the level below, so it's like the VFL level for cricket. So like, oh, it's a bit of a disparity in the way our people train and prepare, and the access to S&C and education levels is so different to what like the boys are getting in the Vic system to what people are doing at like local or premier training. So I'm like, oh, well, there's opportunity here for people to really like improve and get better and things like that. So I sort of just made an Instagram page, started that. I had a mate, Emil Tate, who works at our training with mates, and so through him I was able to start like renting out space to train with mates and get in there with a few guys who I had online already. Started went from there. Started posting stuff, gone from there, and then got in with Saad, trying to do some more business coaching, actually try and do it properly. As I saw, there's a lot of potential in it. And then, here we are about a year or so later, and loving it, so good. Like, it's unreal. I was going to work with like people that I know already, like I just help them coach in the gym, talk absolute shit.
Yeah.
And just like watch them get gains and hopefully dominate the weekend. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I say this to a lot of people, like, it's ridiculous what we get to do for a job. And now you're coaching some of Victoria and Australia's most elite cricketers, including Todd Murphy, who was recently overseas and representing Australia. What was the link there? Is he one of your childhood mates, or someone you just reached out to, or he reached out to you? What's the Todd Murphy link?
Yeah, I love this. I made Todd's the player who he is today. I will say it. I am. Todd, I made you the player you are today. Straight in the camera.
I'll clip that.
100%. Todd's is one of me. One of my best mates. We played some junior like rep cricket together. Through there and through. You know, just like playing that stuff, like spending all pre-seasons together and like going away on tours and that together and stuff like that. And then he had obviously moved down to Melbourne when he got his Vic contract because he's from up like a Trukaway, Moama.
Oh, God's country.
God's country. Absolute place to be. So he's from up there. I'm from Coorup. So obviously in the Victoria over there. But he moved into Melbourne. And then when he was actually, the reason why I moved up to Melbourne was because of him, because he was going away for a couple of Australia Raid tours and Darwin and that. So he's like, I'm going away. Do you want to come move into my room? So I'm moving there to his room with his housemates and that with a couple of my best mates. And then, from there, just in the off season and that, need someone to train, come see me. We go talk shit, have a bit of a train together and that. And it's good. Like even when he come back from his first international tour, like Moddy before the high performance manager, he's like, oh, I'll go train with Coxie for a few weeks, get out of their professional system, go a bit of fun, and like still obviously stay fit, but give yourself a bit of a mental refresher. So it's pretty cool how like Moddy has like the trust in me to pass on like an Australian playing age, go train with him for a couple of weeks and until you're ready to come back into the professional setting.
Yeah. What's some of the, because we chatted about Darcy Moore before, what's some of the traits that Todd Murphy has elicited both from a cricket standpoint, physical prep and just being a good bloke that's allowed him to flourish and be successful as he has been in the past 12 months?
Yeah, I think like it's just like the work ethic that comes down to. Like he wasn't even bowling off spin like when I was playing with him like under 17, so he's only just started bowling at like the last like 5 or 6
years.
Right,
so what was he then as a youngster? Like a batter, was he?
He was a batter. He bowled these shocking mediums and he was captain. He used to like always bowled himself way too much. Wow. And he started bowling his offies, and I didn't really rate him at the start. I had to say, these are pretty shit.
I'll be clipping that now.
Like, these are fucking garbage. Or why he was, he bowling. But yeah, it turns out they're actually right. He's like work ethic, just the way how he just like portrays himself and has like unmatched confidence, just knows what he's going to do, has a plan, does all of his preparation, knows what he's going to do, just goes down and just does it. Like, I think how just level headed he's always been. Like, doesn't get flustered, doesn't panic, always in control of the situation, always calm. and puts him a little bit to 10. Like, and then that's like the mental side. But then he's obviously put a lot of work into his skills and become a good enough player that way. But even like, yeah, back in the day, you could tell he was going to do something pretty special. Like, he's always been pretty measured and like a leader as well. Yeah, he's great.
Level-headed, calm, confident. Yeah. Write them down. Take notes. You said he was a batter and he bowled mediums and then he changed. We see that with like Steve Smith. He like started his career like as a leg spinner, was he, and then become one of the greatest batsmen of Australia's history. How common is that? Do you see that people, they go through their youth as one thing and then when they make it to their adulthood or make it to the elite level, they've actually changed and become, they play a completely different role for the team. Like, how common is that? And again, I'm not deep into cricket, so I wouldn't know. Like, is this a really common thing that happens, or is this
not quite really rare?
No, yeah, okay.
It's quite difficult. Yeah, very hard to do. Like, you obviously go off and you do this one thing. Yeah. And like, you dominate and you get picked in like these junior teams as one thing, and then like you start, you know, pick up a different whole skill altogether. Yeah, even though you're playing the same sport, it's a completely different thing. So it's actually quite, I can imagine, quite hard.
Do you have any insight into how difficult it would actually be to transition and completely just flip your role on its head? Because I guess it's not like footy, like growing up as a backman and then playing as a forward. Like a lot of the skills are sort of interchangeable. Like, you're literally executing a completely different skill.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it'd be, it's almost, it's actually like a different, like, sport. Like, it's a, yeah, it's like from a different end. It'd be like, I actually don't know about other sports. Obviously, like, you have, like NFL. Maybe how like they've like different sort of, like, yeah, playing like, I don't actually watch NFL, but I know they have like a defensive side and they was like doing that and then going to a quarterback or something like that. But like, it's actually completely foreign. It's actually like, when you think about it, it's actually quite bizarre.
Yeah,
it's quite a weird sport, cricket. Actually,
it is.
It's not cool to like it, so I don't really like it that much.
I'd say it's not cool to like it.
No.
Oh no, I beg to differ. Yeah. I beg to differ, mate.
That's great sport.
You talked about Adrian Mott. That was your time interning with Cricket Victoria, correct?
Yeah.
What are some of the best things you learnt from him? You said he was very influential in your career. Like, what are some of the best things you learnt from Motty?
I can, like, just the way how, like, all the, like, you know that sort of, that quote, like, people like athletes won't care about what you know until they know that you care. You know, that's that sort of quote.
I like that one.
Yeah, he, like, the boys just love him. Like, just absolutely love him. He's such a good man. And, like, the boys know, like, you have a joke with him, he'll do that, but they always do, like, all the work that he says, and he sets, like, good standards, but doesn't have to be, like, so strict and rigid, and like, this is what you got to do. Like, he's more about creating, like, an environment that you want to be in, an environment that you want to perform and come to work and have fun and things like that. Like, that's probably the main thing. And, like, just seeing that side of it as well is, like, so crucial. And, like, I was, like, so lucky to intern there. Like, I was interning there in lockdown where everyone else was at home, and I got, like, a work permit to go on a Cricket Victoria and go hang out with me mates and Motty, and, like, it was just crazy experience. And, like, there was times when, like, I think it was before a 2020 World Cup where Aaron Finch, obviously the Australian captain, he was coming back, he had, like, a knee injury. And, like, it was, like, Motty and, like, the Cricket Australia High Performance Manager and, like, a Cricket Australia physio were there. Like, they were in meetings about his rehab and that. And then, like, Motty, like, oh, do you want to join him with the meeting? I'm like, yes. Oh. So we're sitting in a meeting, mapping out Finchie's rehab, and then we'd go out and do, like, fielding drills, and I'm throwing balls to Finchie.
That's outrageous.
And we had, like, the GPS out, and we, like, when he's hit, like, this many, like, D-cells or whatever, we'll stop it there. So I'm just pinging balls to Finchie, and we're throwing the ball, which is insane. Looking back, I'm like, that is ridiculous.
What an experience.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And, like, yeah, the Australian, like, coach was there. It's just, like, it was crazy. So, like, yeah, it's, like, but going back to your question about, like, just being so open with me and creating that environment and, like, the technical skills and that as well. Like, he won a stool gift as a sprinter. Right. So that, like, running mechanic stuff, how we, like, balance his load throughout a week and all that sort of, like, technical sort of S&SD stuff. I love, and, like, yeah, the way how he integrates blokes back in the program when they, like, come back from international stuff or when they go out into Big Bash, and how he manages that sort of stuff, which sort of actually is, like, online coaching, how he sort of manages people when they're away. Yeah, pretty cool. Like, such a good operator. Like, absolute jet.
Yeah, I love what you touched on about how he creates the environment where people want to turn up, which is something we're so big about here. Like, yeah, it's all well and good to say that you've got to do, you know, this, and this, you know, X amount of sessions for a week and hydrate and whatever. But, like, if people don't want to come to the gym and put in the work, well, then that's probably the biggest barrier there is to things getting done. So, and then it's also one thing to create the environment where people want to show up and have fun, but then also have the respect for you to actually listen to what you have to say and then do the work. So that's something that I reckon he's encapsulated really, really well, and something that a lot of coaches should strive to do.
100%. Like, you can write like the best, you have the best program in on Team Builder, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Nobody actually wants it. Like, no one like enjoys your company.
Yeah,
like,
no one wants to be around you. No one likes the environment you created. No one wants to come.
Exactly. If people walk on eggshells, they hate it. They don't really want to come into work. Like, they're like, who's this bloke telling me what to do? Like, you might be the smartest bloke. You might like understand every like how an action potential happens in the muscle and blah, blah, blah. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, and actually create the environment where people want to get better. So the people going to come in with Angie, bring intent, bring Angie, like, bring people along with them who don't want to like actually be there that day. And that's how you actually like create results. Like, a lot of people are going to write very, very similar programs, and they're going to have, everyone understands physiology at a certain level and things like that. But like, can you actually like bring people together?
Yeah.
And bring them on a journey.
Yep. Correct.
That's what the best coaches do. That's what makes it a coach, not like an exercise scientist, I reckon.
Yeah, and then there's, I guess, the other side of the coin. It's finding the middle ground, and you know, not trying to be their best mate too much, which is a mistake I've made, you know, at a footy club in the past. Like, trying to be too good a mate to them, and you know, saying, "Oh yeah, I fucking did this, and this on the weekend," and then you know, you have a great relationship with them, and it's a fun place. But then when it's time to get to work and be serious, and you need to pull someone in the line, it's like, fuck off, mate.
100%. That's what I find. Like, being, like, obviously younger, working in, like, footy or, like, working with people, like, your own age and things like that.
Yeah.
It's like I'll probably be mates with you. Like, I've grown up, we both would have been the same social friend group. Like, we would have, if I went to your school, we'll be friends. But it's kind of like, how do I, like, use that as, like, my advantage? Like, that I'm, like, same age, similar interests and that. How can you make that your advantage and, like, get on their side and things like that, but not get too much on their side where as you said, like, a too good a mate to them, then they don't listen to you and they tell you to piss off and things like that.
Yeah.
So find that balance, and at the start, it's very, 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 very difficult to, like, try and don't almost, like, yeah, you want to have a really good, strong athlete-coach relationship, but I'm probably on the side, I probably do ear on the friend side, right or wrongly, that's just my personality.
And I suppose, like, with, you know, I suppose Todd, that was your friend prior, I guess that doesn't really matter too much, and there would be probably more respect in that regard.
Yeah, 100%.
But, yeah, I think, yeah, we sometimes make the mistake of sometimes trying to be best mates with clients, and that can go against us when it's time to, you know, you need to give them a serve or whatnot. I'm just not good at giving serves to friends.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a lot easier, I reckon, in the sort of like in the private sort of environment. I know, because people are like, they're like paying you to coach, so like the expectation's there. But I can find it in like working like at Box Hill and things like that. That's where I think that's where it's probably the biggest thing for me to like. No, I'm here to work at SNC. Like, and it's a part of building an environment at the footy club as well, that you get amongst the boys and you get around that as well. So it's like fine balance of like, all right, I want to get around them now, but then it's like, how can I pull out and let them be the players, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And trying to still be like, you know, the high performance S&C sort of person, but it's also, as I said before, it's a strength to be close with people, because then you can, like, I know for me personally, having S&Cs that I work with when I was going through juniors and that, like the ones that were, I would say, the better blokes, I'd do things for them because I enjoy their company. Right. And if someone was like coming in, it was a bit like real like sciencey, nerdy, couldn't really talk to you, I'd be like, who's this bloke?
So and you just think back to school, don't you? Like, the teachers you liked most were the ones that showed an interest in you, and you could actually have a bit of a talk and banter with them, and the ones that you dreaded going to their class, they were just pricks, and they just laid down the law, very authoritarian, and it was just boring.
100%. They got their teachers, like, Pulse, he's Virtus, absolute goat from the old podcast. I can see season 1, 2, and 3. I can use on all those. So
Jared?
Oh, Jared Pulse. What a great man. Absolute legend. Moo Rook, king. Absolute legend. We've got Tommy Olden as well. He used to come here. Do you know TK?
Yeah. Nah, he was before my time.
You know Walk Miller?
Nah. So these are all before my time. Yeah,
he played footy at Mornington. He played at Cribby last year, I think. Yeah, three teachers from my school who were all part of the sort of Virtus family back in the day. I can Lock would know. Lock would play footy against him a lot.
Yeah.
So I can lock those three teachers, like, just like the part of the boys sort of thing, but also like, especially Lock, when he gave you a bit of a stern talking to you, always listen. He's a detective now, actually. And I ran into him on the street the other day. Quite rogue and cute. I'm like, so bizarre, but yeah.
Ran into him on the street?
Yeah, I was quite.
You weren't getting in trouble, were you?
That's what I said to him. I'm like, oh, hopefully aren't trying to find me, mate. He's like, nah, I wouldn't be chasing you down, Coxie.
Did Jared Pulser ever give you a good serve?
Oh, I don't reckon Pulse gave me. I reckon Pulse gave me a serve. I reckon Pulse is pretty good to me. I was I was ducks in Pulse's class actually.
Ducks.
So, yeah. So pretty proud to say that.
So you were kissing Pulse's ass.
Oh, 100%. How can you not? He's like, I love Pulse so much. I'd love to have a beer with him. I'll share him out now. Pulse, come have a beer with me.
Yeah, I'll clip this one up. We've talked about Das Merv, talked about Todd Murphy. We'll quickly talk about Jared Pulse. What are some traits that made him a really, really good teacher?
Oh, he's just, like, you just tell he cared, and you can just tell he just loved it as well. Like, just loved his job and, like, just loved helping us. Yeah, and I think, like, he had that really good balance of, like, you respected him, obviously, but also you can have a joke with him, you can chat to him about stuff. And I like people that are like more like down on your level and like you can communicate with sort of that rather than like teachers that like get above you and talk to
real authoritarian.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get around that sort of stuff. So someone who can just like chat to you normally. Yeah. But like, cause you do this. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Awesome. Like such a good man. So like, just being on your level, just got along with him so well, I reckon. Yeah. Yep. Awesome bloke.
Just makes it easy to learn off as well.
Oh, 100%. And like when you can tell people like, yeah, good people. You want to listen to them.
Yeah, you resonate with them more. Yeah, correct.
You have more fun. You're engaged. Engaged in the content. So good. Like, yeah, he was an absolutely great man.
Take us back to Junior Cox coming up and playing cricket. Was, you know, representing Australia like something that you like dreamt of doing as a youngster growing up?
Like, obviously, always like back in the day, if someone gave me an Australian hat, I would have worn it.
Is that something that motivated you?
I wouldn't say it was ever realistic, ever.
Yeah.
And I was pretty aware of that. Like, I think, if you're going to play for a show, maybe that's probably like a handbrake as well. But, I wanted to play the highest level I possibly could. Obviously, I wanted to play for Australia, but was I ever, like, touted to go play for Australia? No.
Yeah. What was the highest level you got to?
I played in, like, the Vic underage teams.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's where I played with.
I mean, shoot, that's pretty high level.
Yeah, it's
state level cricket.
Good cricket. Yeah, it was really good actually. Cause I got to play with like Toddy and such good like half the Victorian.
Yeah, I was going to say, are there any international players playing now that you would have played with at that level?
Yeah, well, obviously Toddy's one there. I played against like a Tanvir Sanger from New South Wales. He's played for just debuted for Australia the other day. Crew Victoria went through like a bit of a transition period with like sort of my age groups. I was lucky enough, I was like around the system, like bottom age and top age. So I had like, you know, people who are a couple of years above me, a couple of years below me. So I know. So it was pretty, like a lot of guys that I sort of played with and against have sort of gone and get state contracts. And a lot of players for Victoria. Like Will Sutherland's the Victorian captain now. Mitch Perry's play Australia A. Like a lot of the boys are sort of playing for Victoria. I think we had like, when I was like interning there, it was really weird because it was like 15 or 16 boys I played with like a year or 2 years before were sort of on contract. So I was just like hang out with the boys, learn S&C like in lockdown.
Just whining about the clock.
Just living the dream. The boys, I think when I first walked in, the boys were asking if I was getting treatment from the physio. I'm like, nah, I'm not that. We had a couple it's a couple of players sort of starting to come through now. Toddy's the main one who's playing for Australia and doing really, really well.
Any good Todd Murphy stories?
And
you'd have plenty, but
none that are suitable for the camera.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
I would have thought.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some that are suitable for off camera. I'll give you a couple of good ones. Yeah. But
you keep thinking about that, and whilst we chat about your transition to working in the health and fitness industry, when did that start, and when did your passion for that really start to ignite?
Yeah, so sort of going through that sort of like that junior cricket Victoria academy sort of thing. Like we had S&Cs there, and I was always sort of like, oh, that'd be a pretty cool job to have one day. I did a bit of work experience at Concreta back in Cooyarup.
Oh, wow.
All the boys are tradies, and I'm just like, from the start, like, geez, I just don't enjoy it.
Well, that's it. And I'm Australia's worst handyman as well, so it'd probably end in tears if I was on the tools.
Oh, 100%. The boys, like, I copped a lot of shit, especially at the start, like, going to uni and that. Like, a lot of my mates didn't even finish VCE. They just trained in trades and that. Mm. So going to uni is a pretty foreign thing, but I was sort of like, yeah, the S&C thing would be pretty cool. Cool job to have sort of thing. But once again, sort of finished like year 12. Didn't really know what I wanted to do at all, but saw Deakin had like a degree. Did exercise science and a sports management double degree. I'm like, I had two degrees, sport degrees. That sounds
bang.
Sounds like me. Sounds good. So got into that. First year or so there, wasn't really doing too much at all. I was just cruising through, working a couple of cafe shifts and Yeah, not doing much really with my life. And then I sort of got my first intern, like a placement at Rise, where I met Jazz. Was sort of like the
Rise
Health in Roeville. That's where Jazz is at.
Yep.
So that's where I met Jazz there. That was really good. So that was like a lot of coaching reps. Get stuck into that.
What sort of demographic are you working with at Rise?
Oh, that, I was like at Roeville High School.
High School. So
that was at high school. Yep. So it was like Rise Health Group. They're like the business that went in the Rover sort of sports academy. So
gotcha. Yep.
A lot of kids pumped through there. Like, it was actually a really good experience. You get a lot of coaching reps. You just coach, do what you want with them. Elite. So you get exposed that really, really early. And then from there, that's when I went into, like, got in the internship at Crew Victoria. So I did that into there. Really, like, obviously loved that. Just, like, so good. But it's still, like, a really, like, comfortable experience. Even though I was going like a pro scene, as I sort of said before, like 15, 16 of like blokes that like I sort of knew and played with.
Yeah.
I knew some like that, like the girls players as well.
It wasn't necessarily a new environment.
No, exactly. Same building, the same gym that I like, was in as it like myself. Like it was pretty cool. And like the SNC there was like my SNC. It's like from the 19s. The SNC was the same one for mine, the 19s as well. So I sort of knew some people in there as well. I knew like the women's head coach was my coach. Like it was just very like, I was like sort of, I knew a lot of people there. So it was very comfortable. Which is a good place to start. But then I went into then the VIS. I got an internship there.
Oh, yep.
So I did that for a year. So rowing. That was a whole new experience. I wanted to do something a little bit different. I was sort of missed stuck footy, cricket, blokey sort of stuff, my whole sort of life. So that was like a planned thing to do something a little bit different, a little bit out there. So I did that for a year of rowing. Spent a little bit of time with athletics and dabbled in a couple of other things. But yeah, that was good. Definitely become a better coach from that.
Did you go into the industry always wanting to work with athletes and go into sort of the strength and conditioning field? Or like, have you done work with sort of general population that are just wanting to enhance their general health and well-being, maybe a bit of body composition type stuff? Or has it always just been very athlete development focused?
Very much athlete development focused. After my Victoria internship, I got a job at Bodyfit, actually, my first fitness sort of job.
Is that BFT, Bodyfit?
Yeah. So I got a job there, worked there, one in Sandhurst, so like back home, back near Cranbourne. So I started working there, but always like, I wanted to work with athletes, want to do athletes sort of stuff there. Yeah, for sure. That's sort of what I enjoy and what I love. I still do, I work at a gym in Kew, workshop gym, which is more gen pop stuff. I do a couple of mornings there a week
Nice.
Which is still, I still enjoy it at the end of the day. Like, it's actually like everyone's people and like it's just good training.
Yeah, that's right. Like, yeah, the differences are actually very, very slim in their programming and what it looks like, you know. And these things that we think are athletic qualities, like the need to be fast and to jump and to have robust tendons and to be powerful, like they're all qualities that not just athletes should be able to elicit, but other humans as well. And then you just turn the dials, like, you know, a fast bowler in cricket, he might need some stuff for his adductors and his sides. But again, a normal human being needs strong sides and adductors as well. But we just turn down the dials according to their activity that they participate in.
100%. Couldn't agree more. Like, yeah, people are people. And like, it's just whatever... whatever tasks that they want to do really, really well, you just, as you sort of said, I love that dial, that dimmer switch or that dial sort of analogy. Like, it's just like, turn a bit of this up, turn a bit of that down, you adjust
spring that. A bit of this.
100%, a bit of that, bang, and then there's a program and you sort of just like, and there's a way you communicate it and coach it and things like that.
Yeah.
That's where you get all the money from it. So yeah, like, yeah, I still enjoy like gym bot people. It's more like the people who you're with, but isn't it? Like, I just naturally through my, just I've grown up in the social circles and that, I get along really well with people who play footy and cricket.
Well, that's it, yeah.
So
it's what you're best at.
100%. So I enjoy communicating with people who play footy and cricket. So I'm put myself in situations where I can coach people who I enjoy being around.
It's a lifestyle design thing. If you want to train and hang out with a certain demographic, then yeah, put yourself in a situation where you get to do that, in which you've done very, very well. Yeah. What did you learn when you were outside of your comfort zone in the rowing sector?
Well, geez, I didn't know much about rowing going into it. Gee whiz.
Yeah, well, that, because I sort of put myself in those shoes. I'm like, fuck, how would I go in that? And, you know, knowing that there's not a lot of difference, but still, like, it'd be a different environment.
Oh, yeah, different, like how, like just understanding the sport, you got sweeping and sculling and what the difference is there. And then
over my head.
And then trying to find out, like, who sweeps, who sculls, and trying to memorize that. And, you know, there's people coming in and you're trying to figure out, they're trying to pure relationships with people that it's not like, it's not the same environment as like a footy club or a cricket club. Yeah. It's a different environment, the institute system. So trying to build a relationship with the athletes, but then also trying to prove yourself as like a good coach and things like that, and working your way through that. It's just, yeah, understanding the sport is probably the main thing at the start. Like, just making sure you don't look like an idiot when you're talking to them. Actually understand what you're talking about, and like you understand their sport, especially when like we're like Olympic gold medalist training with us, which is pretty sick. So we had the women's four who won it in the year before, wherever that was, Rio maybe.
Yeah,
I think it was more Rio.
Oh, I'll nod and say yes, yeah, but in sure, reality,
yeah,
I don't know.
I think it's so. Yeah, so we the Olympic gold medalist training with us, and I was like, this is insane. This is ridiculous. But then like trying to actually like, how can I actually help them when I first come without really knowing the sport? So you go actually know the sport. It just comes down to being a good person in the day. Show you care, like actually engage with them in that, and just be a good person that way. But yeah, like understand like what you actually need, how you can actually help them, and how can you service the athletes is probably the big thing.
And I suppose we talk about earning respect. Like if you roll in there and not knowing a thing about their sport, well, there goes all your credibility and respect.
Oh, 100%. Especially if they're like big dogs and they're floating in for a couple of weeks and going back up to Sydney where they train. It's just like, okay, how can I just not make myself look like a fool and like just understand Rowan a little bit, because I've had zero, I didn't know Rowan was even that big. I'm like, oh, what is going on here? And like people actually do this like full time, and then understanding like their training schedule is rowing. They are the hardest workers in the whole world.
Yeah, wow.
Like a week in a row it would be, so get Monday on the water at 6, train for like 2 hours, like 25K session. Like you're on the erg, like downstairs, like imagine 25Ks on that thing.
Yeah, that's some serious mileage.
Ridiculous. Doing that, and then you have breakfast, go for like a two or three hour bike ride. Nice, casual, easy day. Yeah. Then come into the gym for a couple of hours with us. When you see them in the gym, they've retrained for 5 hours, which is insane. So try and navigate loads and things like that. And the next day, they'll get another 25K session. Then same Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all the same thing. They'll probably do like triple session or a double session. Oh, insane. And ridiculous amount of like volume. They like will exercise aerobically for like 25 hours a week.
That's mad. And I knew they were hardworking, but I didn't know that they were putting up those sorts of numbers.
Insane.
Which is outrageous to me. You said there were like sweepers and scullers. Are these, I guess, different roles that you almost have to prepare for differently? Like similar to like a fast bowler and a batsman and a like.
Yeah.
Does preparation look different for those? Well, firstly, what are they? And does preparation look different for those roles?
Yeah, so you, like when you scull, you like you would have seen like, when they like they're both yours sort of thing. Have you seen that one before?
Yeah.
So and then sweeping is when they have like one oar and they just go to one side.
Okay.
So when you sweep, they're just rotating to one side the whole time.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously something you need to consider, because they're obviously just like thoracically rotated to one side the whole time. Mm. So trying to open up better the other side.
Yep.
Would be nice. I'm sure they feel a lot better from that. And then apart from that, but obviously you just want to get them, like, generally just really strong, powerful, robust in their shoulders, their backs play up a fair bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are some of the common injury sites for a rower?
So get this, a rib stress fracture. I didn't know that they existed, no idea. Ribs get stress fractures, what are you talking about? Like, insane. So they get rib stressies, which is the main one there, and that's like a load thing as well, and then like obviously everything sort of goes like how their scaps move and things like that.
What part of the rib?
Like back in behind up here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's Coxie's just pointing for those that aren't watching, like Coxie's like pointing sort of behind your shoulder there?
Yeah, like behind like in behind like your shoulder blade. So around that sort of area.
Okay.
Like on the back side of the ribs usually.
Yeah.
Which is quite fascinating actually.
Management of rowing related injuries?
Like load, obviously they do, as I sort of mentioned, they do a lot of load.
Yeah.
So just gradually building them back into that. Like they get like sore backs now, as you can imagine. Like if you've ever spent 5 minutes on there, your back gets pretty sore. So just back stuff, just mobility work. Maybe you might need like every now and then, like you need to pivot your session a fair bit. So if like they come in, you got like back squats in your session, their back's pretty cooked, just chuck one a belt squat.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Just sort of agile, just like lateralize your session when need be, and just still get the loading that you want, but just find a different alternative strategy and don't always be married to your program that you've written on that day.
It sounds like, like all athletes we work with, we've got to auto-regulate depending on how they've been at work or other things have done and injuries. It sounds like you have to auto-regulate a fair bit with the amount of load that a rower's doing? Like, is it literally just daily that you're constantly, you're having to change something in a rower's program?
Yeah, like a little bit, 100%. Like, you might not like update it on team a little bit. It's just that conversation piece you have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you go, oh, like, yeah, maybe I pull back a little bit. Go a little bit lighter there. Like, just tick the box and get through today. Because they have their blocks. Like, they have, like, four-week training blocks sort of thing. So, they're, like, a light, heavy, and then, like, a deload sort of thing. So, you know, on their big weeks, they're going to be pretty cooked, especially coming into Wednesday, because they have Thursday morning, like, a sleepy on Thursday morning, the rowers. So, coming to Wednesday session, they're absolutely, like, they're like zombies. And then come back for Friday, and that's it. They feel a little bit fresher. And so, moving. Just, like, how the load throughout the week. See, on Monday, they're going right. Usually, on a deload week is where they'll actually feel pretty, like, you actually will be sluggish, and then that week after the daylight week, they'll feel a little bit sharper, ready to go again. But
yep.
It's one of those things. The culture is pretty much just like go sort of thing, and like sort of push. So they're like, the whole rowing culture is very like, yeah, train hard, work hard, things like that. So they're really like, they're pretty tough, not gonna lie. They just soldier on.
Mm. And a lot of people in the industry, myself included, have had a lot to say about proactive deloads, but this could be one of those situations where like very much, you know, a team would get a lot of benefit out of scheduling that in.
Yeah, 100%. I think like with that proactive deload, I'm with you a little bit. With like in like gen pop stuff and like, you know, obviously when people can get, say like, I don't know, they miss a session every now and then just because of life, that's fair enough. But I think like when you can control every single thing, like obviously you probably can proactively deload a little bit when you're like in a professional setting and things like that. But
yep.
Gen pop, like everyday life, just keep soldiering on. And then if nothing pops up and you do need a deload, then cool. But typically, someone's going to pop up.
Reactively deload, yeah.
100%. Someone's going to pop up. Like they're going to miss a session every now and then. Someone's going to have a birthday dinner on. Someone's going to get a little bit sick. Someone's
get on the beers.
Someone can't be bothered. Get on the beers, 100%.
Let's talk about online before we quickly wrap this up. It's a space that you're delving into. What's that look like? And is that something that the future of high-performance cricket, is that something like you want to be like a purely online-based business, or is there always going to be an element of face-to-face delivery to your business?
There will always be an element of face-to-face. Face-to-face is still the king. It's still the best, but online gives you the ability to help people from any part of the world, which is great. Mm. I still do like a bit of, obviously I still do a lot of like in-person stuff, which is great for the guys based in Melbourne, but online stuff allows us to like sort of like scale and help people from Queensland or help people from like South Australia and things like that.
So you're working with people all over Australia.
Yeah. A couple of guys in Queensland, a couple in South Australia, a couple in Tassie. So that's something that like, I want to reach out into more. Hopefully, get a couple in the UK is the goal. Get into the UK sort of market that way. So yeah, it still works really really well. Like they're still getting like a program that's, you know, individualized to them, probably going to be better than what they're doing now by themselves as a coach. 100% agree on that. And they still get, they still can send videos through. You can still see how they're moving. You can talk to them on the phone or a video call every week or every couple of weeks and check in, see how things are going. I'm probably more like an over communicator over text. I try to text them a fair bit. I like what's going on. I don't want them to leave me. Always make sure everything's going well.
Well, that's it. And like, if someone's paying for an online service and they don't hear from you, well, then what's the point of it?
100%. 100%. I just try to provide as much like support and as I possibly can when I'm from online. And some people like really like just doing their own thing as well. Like just have training when they want to. Like it might not fit into their schedule to come and see you in person. Like I want to go to this gym. I enjoy that. I train with a friend. So it just gives like, online coaching gives people the flexibility to do what they want, but also then have the confidence to know that they have the best programming and the best support behind them to perform their goals, reach their dreams, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So I know I might be getting you to repeat yourself here because you did just faintly brush over it, but someone, let's just say, from the UK reaches out to you like, hey, Jason, love what you're doing. Like, I'd love to work with you online. What value do they get from working with High Performance Cricket online? And what makes that better than just them just taking themselves through their own gym program or perhaps doing the one that their local cricket club coach has just sort of handed to them on an A4 piece of paper?
Yeah, well, with cricket, mate, like a lot of it is just like belief shifting. Like, you know, cricketers need to be athletic and strong and powerful, which is like something that I'm trying to sort of put out there. Yeah. So number one thing, usually people aren't really going to the gym, or they're probably doing like a bodybuilding gym program or something that's very like not as beneficial as what training to be more athletic is. Mm. So if you want to be a more athletic and dynamic and explosive cricketer, then like I'll put you on an individualised program for you, so you know that you're getting exactly what you need to have. You can go into the gym, have the confidence that, yep, I've worked. Anything that you need to do is show up, put the work in, and like you're moving in the right direction. You're shifting needle towards your goals. So that's what they get from that. Like the program, S&C wise, I can put in like warm ups or any like movement prep work or recovery, mobility sort of stuff in there too. So essentially, whatever we decide is best for you, I can chuck in whatever you want, whatever you need in your program. Strength, power, mobility, recovery stuff, whatever you want.
And then that, like, accountability and support, they're getting that through their check-ins with you? And like, how frequent are they?
Yeah, 100%. So, like, I check in over text probably 2-3 times per week, just see how things are going.
Yep.
I like getting to know people, so I like just to ask how the week's going, just chatting, just chatting shit. And then...
I mean, that's like the relationship-building side of it, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. I love it. I love people. So, and then from there, like, either, like, there's some people we do check-ins once a month or we check-ins once a week over the phone, like, more of a structured thing where we chat things through and things like that. So that's where you get that support and that more nutrition, education, like, we delve into, like, the mental sort of skill side of cricket as well. That sort of more cricket awareness, more the career coaching side can come in too, which I think people really value, especially at this time of year in season as well. Talk through your performance, talk through how you're thinking in this situation when, like, let's say you're a bowler, when the batsman was going at your hard, what was your thought process?
Yep.
Were you controlling the things that you can control? Were you worried about what they were doing? And you sort of help them provide mental frameworks around how they can sort of deal with that situation better and, like, mentally be a little bit stronger and like how you can regulate your emotions. Because at the end of the day, you're going to think something, you're going to feel something on the cricket field. You may as well make those feelings or like you may as well be thinking about something that's going to benefit your performance rather than things that are going to take it away. So thinking about, oh, I suck, or oh, this batsman's too good for me. How can I focus on the things that I can control rather than worry about all the external stuff, which is going to happen anyway, whether I think it or not. So I may as well focus the limited energy I have on the things that I can take control of.
That's really cool. And something I was going to ask you, like, is that actually a service you offer as well? Like the actual cricket skill coaching side of it, like outside of the physical prep and athlete development, like do you delve into like a little bit of cricket technique skill coaching as well?
Like I'll dabble in it a little bit. I'd say I can like from like a bowling technique or a batting technique, like obviously I know enough.
Yeah.
I will outsource that, and I'm actually myself and the Rocket Factory is a fast bowling
the
coach. The Rocket Factory. Unruh has gone viral, the Rocket Factory. Yep. So me and the Rocket Factory, he does a bit of work with my guys too. So I'm going to shout out the Rocket Factory. Absolutely go.
Yeah, pump him up.
And we've got some stuff coming soon as well. We've got some stuff in the works, releasing some programs.
Collaboration.
Very much a collaboration. Good. So we've got some stuff coming up there. So some few in-season and off-season sort of programs coming in too. He does some work with my bowlers as well. So he's does some technique. When you sign up for me, he can give you like a technique analysis if you're a fast bowler, which is great. And then what we're looking to do is integrate sort of those like how I do the check-in sessions as well. He can get involved with them too and talk about more technique and that game awareness, actual like skill side of it as well. So trying to get, we're just getting that off the ground at the moment, but that's something exciting coming for like the fast bowlers out there to try and get an actual more like a better and just upgrade the service as well. So getting a gun fast bowling coach in to help us lift it up as well.
That's such a like it's such an obvious collaboration to make, like something I just wouldn't have thought of, but it's such an obvious collaboration. Like you open a high performance facility for cricketers and you just collaborate with a actual skill coach. And can I say what a fucking incredible name the Rocket Factory is, by the way.
It's the best name on the planet. And he's such a good man, Simon. So yeah, the stuff he's done, we had our first sort of like meeting coffee the other day, but yeah, we're looking at that collab and do a couple of a partnership and getting to do some programs and stuff together as well for all the fast bowlers out there and getting him involved with my clients and him and me getting involved with some of his clients as well. Like at the end of the day, it's just going to make people bowl faster, be better cricketers. Essentially what we're trying to do is just create, like, give people the experience what it would be like in a professional environment and try and replicate that for people who aren't on a state contract for now and try and push them up into that system, which is great. I've also got a partnership with the Crew Victoria physios as well. So my guys can go into Crew Victoria and see their physios in there as well, which is cool. So we're trying to create a bit of like a all-round hub of like his cricket sort of performance and get around to all that.
That's sick. It sounds like there's some huge things coming for high-performance cricket, and it sounds like anyone that signs up for that service is going to get immense value. And I can't wait to see where it all leads over the next few years, mate. Coxie, big things on the horizon for yourself, mate.
We love, mate. We love cricket, and
we do.
It's such a good little sport, and everyone gets around it. So we have good fun, most importantly, which is the main thing.
Just before I do cut it off, I was just overseas at the World Test Champs and the Ashes. Have you ever been overseas to watch an international cricket game?
No, actually, I've only ever been to Bali. Bucket actually, list.
Oh mate,
is my only overseas experience. Yeah. So I need to get myself over to Europe like you were. I think I'm thinking 2025. I'm on it off. But no, I haven't actually. But I wouldn't mind getting over there. Sometime soon.
I asked that question because I thought you had, but now people will just be thinking that's an excuse for me to just mention that I went to Europe again. I did, in fact, but we will leave it there before I cut you off and we go downstairs and train. I'll give you the floor for a few minutes just to plug yourself. Where can people find you? Socials. Yeah, everything. Plug yourself, mate.
Instagram, probably the best one. Highperformance.cricket. Yep. Best one there. Or like Jason Cox, _ performance coach. On Instagram, probably the main one to find me. I've got a website, highperformancecricket.net. Couldn't get the .com flat. That's right.
That's right.
That happens. But yeah, I've just talked about myself for an hour, so I don't need to worry about plugging myself anymore.
And I'll give you a really good plug in the episode description on Spotify and YouTube. I'll make sure I give you a really good pump up, mate. Beautiful. First guest for season 5 or 6 or whatever it is.
Mate, it's a late, big like full circle thing for me, mate. I was talking about before, it was in Virtus about in like year 10, I think it was, or year 11. So it's nice to be back. Back in the new podcast studio, taking over the reins from Pulse.
Yeah, very cool, because I don't think we mentioned this. I've known Coxie for a bit over a year now. We're on the same sort of business mentorship group, and I was just going through some old photos a few months back, and like there was Jason Cox just on the gym floor wearing an old Virtus t-shirt, which is the one he's actually wearing now underneath his high-performance cricket.
Still got it.
Vest. Still got the retro logo.
For like 8 years old, I reckon this.
Just sent it to, actually, maybe you even sent the photo to me. And yeah. I was like, what the fuck's going on here?
Mate, so, I knew Virtus before. You knew Virtus.
Yeah, no, literally. Yeah, a former student of Jared Pulsar.
Shout out.
Full circle, mate.
Big shout out.
Good to have you here, mate.
No, absolute pleasure, mate.
We're going to go down the stairs and train. What are we training?
Uppers. Chest.
Of course.
Pipes.
I did uppers, yeah. I mean, every day is uppers day for me.
Well, it's just how it should be for everybody.
Exactly right. Beautiful. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming on, Cox.
Legend, mate. I absolutely appreciate it. Thank you.